thank you so much for joining us for Focus Wire's third LinkedIn audio event. Let's hear it. This topic is seamless but secure, ChatGPT and data protection in travel. I am Focus Wire Editor-in-Chief Mitra Sorrells. So glad that you are with us today. In the travel industry, a lot of the buzz around generative AI has been about the opportunity to create a more personalized, fast, frictionless experience for shopping and booking. But that means that these chat solutions should be able to access personal information like traveler preferences and even payment methods. And that, of course, raises questions about where this data resides and how that access happens. The challenge becomes how to use this technology for human to AI communication in a way that is secure and trustworthy. Certainly, it's a complex topic, but I know our panelists will have some valuable perspectives for us. If you would like to ask a question, please click the raised hand icon. And then once I acknowledge you, you will need to unmute yourself in order to be heard. And we are recording this, and we'll have a story on FocusWire with the full audio file available on demand. So please go to our website, focuswire.com, to subscribe to our e-newsletter so that you will receive that and all of our updates in your inbox every morning. And now for some quick introductions, we have with us today Patrick Suri, Chief Data Scientist at Hopper, Sanjay Mohan, Group Chief Technology Officer at Make My Trip, and Trevor Butterworth, co-founder and vice president of governance at Indicio. I should say Stefan Vanderbeel of Microsoft, who was originally on the program, is unfortunately not able to join. So Patrick, Sanjay, Trevor, welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi.
Great. So, you know, since ChatGPT first came on everyone's radar a few months ago, there has been so much excitement about it, and yet, of course, also concern, even fear, and of course, continued calls for regulation. The big news this week has been the testimony of OpenAI CEO Sam Altman urging lawmakers in the U.S. to regulate artificial intelligence. So I would like to begin with a question for each of our panelists. On a scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you that generative AI will change the travel industry? And then second, how concerned are you about the future of data privacy in relation to its use? So let's hear it. Trevor, can you give us what would be your 1 to 10 rating on those two questions?
Okay, so the challenging question, because as you know, this technology keeps moving in leaps and bounds in very, very short time periods. And in fact, I don't think there's any technology that has moved at such a pace in my lifetime. So predictions are a fool's business in this game. But I would say that in this year, my numeric rating would be 4 for the first question. And for the privacy and security thing, well, it's always 10. Because the one group we know who are able to take the most advantage of sort of edge case technologies and emerging technologies, it's criminal enterprises.
Okay. All right. Patrick, how about you on a scale of 1 to 10, confidence that it will change the industry and then concern about data and privacy issues?
Yeah. I think, as Trevor said, it depends a lot on what you mean by change and kind of what time scale that you're looking over. But I think I would say about 8 or 9 in terms of actually changing the way that travel businesses interact with their customers, whether it actually changes the travel experience for the user. Maybe that's a different question. But it certainly will have impact on how we interact with our customers and how we run our businesses internally. It's probably the first place that we'll see impact. I think in terms of data protection and privacy, I would give a similar score, maybe 9. I think that's one of the biggest challenges with this technology. You know, probably I would say the technology that demos the best of any product tech I've ever seen. But I think that is dangerous in that it misleads people into understanding what it's actually doing and ascribing, you know, capabilities to ChatGPT that it doesn't actually have. And I think that's assembled lots of problems with, you know, accuracy and authoritative data sources and how we integrate with customer data that we really need to be careful about that we understand correctly.
Okay. And Sanjay, just a quick rating for us on a scale of 1 to 10.
So I'll probably answer it in two parts. In the eventual scheme of things and for the larger industry, I would believe the potential to change the future, obviously, I'll put somewhere between 8 and 10. Huge, huge potential to create long-term impact, even for the travel industry particularly. So a very high scope of impact in the future. On the data privacy and protection risk, again, that I will split into correct content and biased content. I would say this high risk in an open-ended scenario, it's hugely risky that there will be model hallucinations and there will be biases. So very high risk, 9 or 10 over there. In terms of data privacy, I would put it somewhere in the middle, say somewhere around 5. We still have to wait and watch. So I don't want to create too much panic, but don't want to be too complacent either.
Okay. All right. Very valid point. So maybe we can begin. Patrick, can you just briefly give us a sense of what Hopper is currently doing or exploring with generative AI?
Yeah, I mean, I think we think about it in two ways. I think one is how we work internally. I mean, there's obviously lots of really interesting productivity tools. So we're doing lots of experimentation with, assisted development in the hopes of being able to deliver product more rapidly, more effectively, learning lots of interesting things and lots of data privacy, concerns there, whether we want to implicitly share our code base with, a central training and so forth. We're also looking at kind of traditional use cases for chat in terms of how we interact more effectively with our customers and have some projects underway there. I think the other thing that in a sort of longer timescale that we're interested in is ChatGPT as a form factor for interacting with users. I think we've seen a bunch of travel companies launch sort of lightweight integrations with ChatGPT, which aren't very well integrated back to the sort of fundamental travel inventory and content. So you kind of have a chat experience, but doesn't go very deep. And I think, that's one of the things that's interesting to us is obviously people are good at talking and typing text, and that's probably a better way for them to be able to interact with parts of our travel purchase experience. I think we're really interested in that.
Okay. And Sanjay, I know last week Make My Trip introduced voice-assisted booking in collaboration with Microsoft and the OpenAI technology. Can you just tell us a bit more about that and how, if I understand correctly, the idea is that it can surface personalized recommendations and actually complete the booking. So that, of course, raises some questions there about the data. Yeah, tell us more about that.
So let me walk you through the two use cases. There are two broad sets of use cases that we have deployed already. The first set of use cases are around creating relevant summary from a large corpus of content, which is where large language models are really good. So for example, consider hotel reviews. It's really painful to scroll through hundreds of user reviews for every hotel to look for things that matter to you. Several of those reviews are not even from customers like yourself. So you might be a solo business traveler. Why should you be suffering through reviews written by people who are on a family vacation? So their considerations are different. The user, the customer cohort is very different. So we are trying to do a contextual summarization of reviews for every hotel, given the corpus of trusted reviews that we have on our site, submitted by users who have actually stayed at that hotel. So there's complete trust over here. And those shopping considerations are similar to yours. So there's personalization and relevance as well. So that's the first category of use cases of doing smart and relevant summarization of UGC content. Okay. The second set of use cases are conversational, where and this is the area where these new generative AI models actually shine. We are using this for customers interested in buying holiday packages or flights from us, and this is the use case that you're probably talking about. We would extend the conversational flows to other products also later on, Currently, we are also testing the waters. What is most interesting and differentiating for us is that, number one, it is tightly coupled and very tightly integrated with the product flows, as to address Patrick's comment also. It's not isolated, but it's a part of the product flow. So very tightly integrated. And the most interesting feature is that we are experimenting with voice interfaces in Indian languages.
Okay.
So you should understand that a good percentage of India lives in smaller towns and villages and would struggle with English as a language. While they are very comfortable speaking in their native regional or vernacular languages, and for this set of users, this is just the right fit, that you can interact in voice, do your transactions. We are fundamentally trying to make it easy for this segment of India to shop online. So that is, those are the two sets of use cases. Now, to address the other part of the thing is that, yeah, this is personalized because we have a very crisp demarcation and a segregation of what happens within the conversational generative AI interface versus what happens within the product flows. So all the user interaction, the shopping, the transaction that is strictly contained within the confines of the product flows, completely within the product boundaries, and the typical conversations of eliciting answers from the users, which is fundamentally, if you talk about a typical shopping flow in a travel, for a travel product, is fundamentally a form filling. It's a complex form that you have to fill out before you make a purchase. So eliciting those answers, that is typically what is happening to the conversational flow. So we have segregated into two pieces. One is a pure conversation flow, and the other part is the data handling, which is completely within the product. So okay, that is completely secure.
Yeah, and I did see a comment you had made when this announcement came out last week on the question of data, where you said that it is similar to the data you collect in your apps, you know, strictly need only, and it has the same type of guardrails in place. I guess I'd like to bring Trevor into this conversation. You know, what goes through your mind as you're hearing about these use cases and about using data in this way? I mean, is that really enough to address some of the security concerns, would you say?
Well, I couldn't, you know, without looking in detail at the product flows, I wouldn't want to comment directly to Sanjay's product. I think what's, so let me kind of level set a little. What our company is doing is working on the other side of seamless travel after you've booked your flight or your hotel. And what we use, what we're building, are digital travel credentials based on ICAO standards that allow people to hold their data and verify their data in a way that doesn't involve, which involves consent-based sharing of that data with the appropriate authorities. But that provides the seamless quality of the experience. So, you know, as we recently crossed a border using effectively blockchain and verifiable credentials, and we definitely see that as affecting every part of the travel journey, the journey, the travel flow, up to, you know, being able to unlock your hotel room because you have the right verifiable credential. But a key part of that is that there's no third party accessing your data or monitoring you or surveilling you. It's only the legal authorities that are responsible for, you know, for overseeing that journey that get to share the legally, get to see the legally obligated data. So my question is, so I can only really respond this to this with a question. Like, so I think these ways that AI being used are fantastic. But at a certain point, where does PII come into play? Personally identifiable information, and who gets to see that? Is Microsoft using all this data that it's collecting from the people that use your app to improve the app? Have they consented to that? Is there any security risk with that? Is account information being stored somewhere? I don't know. I'm sure Sanjay is going to tell us. These are the questions I would ask at this stage. obviously, when AI gets, or you know, presumably gets to a much more complex level of functioning, you know, as we, you know, in the term of, as a valet for an individual, then things become a lot more trickier. But I don't think we're quite there yet. So the, you know, the security concerns might not be as high in current situations. But I'm curious to understand more about how this works too.
Your
concerns, Trevor. So while you're doing a conversation on a conversational interface, there's also a prompt engineering that comes in between, right? So all of the data first comes to the prompt, and then from there you choose what you want to send to the back-end conversational engine. And that is where the beauty is, because at that point of time, you can just hide and separate, cull out all the personal information for the user, contain it within your system, but fundamentally have the conversation go on. Because if you know you need 10 parameters from the user, you can just keep a count and then continue the conversation in that manner without sharing any data with anybody. So that's what we are doing right now. I hope it addresses. I can't give you more details at this point of time, but more or less that is what we are doing.
Right. Well, I mean, again, I would say anything that, you know, if anything that allows a travel company to say they're GDPR compliant is probably a good step. To start managing the data issue. I think when it comes to sort of integrations or plugins that allow you to do a lot more complex things, especially around, you know, purchasing and financial account information, you know, obviously it's very difficult to discuss these in the abstract, but these are definitely areas where we have to be super careful. Okay.
So yeah, my guess is that most companies are taking baby steps, and they wouldn't venture that far of just completing the entire conversation through a bot. Obviously, right. Poor product flows have to take over at some point of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, I read in March that there was actually a bug within OpenAI, within ChatGPT Plus, where there was possibly some payment related information that was accidentally made visible beyond where it should have been made visible. So, I mean, certainly these are issues that I think will be bubbling up. Patrick, I'm curious, you referenced, you know, that you are considering and really giving some thought to these issues around data privacy and security and what to share, it sounded like, and kind of how much to upload or make visible. Can you just talk a bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that we're concerned about is the sort of chain of custody of the data. So, I mean, obviously the simple case is, you know, as you're interacting with many of these chat models, you're implicitly sharing the content back with the, you know, the provider of that model, which will be fed into to train and tune that model. I think you also have a kind of potentially implicit bias. You know, there's lots of interesting stories where these models, you know, they sort of know things in some sense about particular, you know, people based on their name or other kinds of information. So they will give different answers, you know, in a customer service context, for example, based potentially on PII that partly identifies a user, right? And that's baked into the language model. And I think that's a really interesting question. Can we really understand what those biases are? Can we really give the end user control over their own data? You know, GDPR requires that a user can opt out and review and delete their data. You know, how do you do that in a chat model, which has been trained on, you know, billions of documents, some of which implicitly refer to this person through their LinkedIn profile or whatever, right? You're going to rebuild these models. So I think there's a lot of questions like that where, you know, we're quite concerned that we want to make sure we're doing the right thing. I think there's certainly lots of positive benefits, but these kinds of issues around implicit bias and the chain of custody of data and the sort of accuracy and trustworthiness of what we're giving back without necessarily having authoritative sourcing and referencing, you know, there's a lot of issues we need to work out before we can be comfortable about doing this in a completely automated way.
So, Patrick, do you think this is going to be an issue where regulation is going to have to come into play? I mean, it always seemed to me this was the kind of the real sticky problem with a quote unquote intelligent agent learning from somebody's data is who owns the learning. How do you see that? What are the pathways to that being resolved?
I think completely. I mean, I think lots of existing regulations apply, and it's unclear, you know, how they can be enforced. You already see lots of questions with, you know, lawsuits of owners of data. Getty Images, you know, has had their content scraped, as have many others. And I think that includes lots of, you know, semi-personal data, right? Anything that's written about you on the web is now part of this language model. So it will have a bias. If it sees your name in a conversation, it now has a bunch of different weights in how it's going to respond to you. And I don't think we have clear kind of sourcing and referencing. You know, that's one of the problems with these models. It's hard to explain why they do what they do. And if it's exhibiting some weird bias because of some document it ingested about you on the web, but it can't explain that, you know, that's a really tough situation to be able to work within even the existing regulations. I'm sure regulations will change, but you know, the technology is changing much faster than regulators work and can understand, I think. So I think it's incumbent on all of us to make sure we're really doing the right thing by our customers.
Yeah, we do have a question here. Let me see, Jonathan Sutter from JD Power Travel Industry Practice. Let me enable you to speak. You may need to unmute yourself.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. Appreciate this, this dialogue. So here's a question for everyone. This is a question, not a statement. There was an article in MIT Technology Review in March, which weighed in and documented the history of what OpenAI had done with building GPT-3, which led to GPT-3.5. There was an action, I think based on Will's assessment in that article, and I'm just going based on that article, the actual maybe what the impetus or what had led to 3 was around since 2020, and maybe it wasn't public facing. Again, I'm reading back from that article, and I think there are other articles that talk about history before 2020. So this technology had been around for a while, and stakeholders that were close, I think, knew that it existed. So there's that point of view, and then maybe there's a separate point of view. And again, I'm not independently aware of this, but I'm just going based on that article. There's a separate. I'm reading a book that another stakeholder who I trust tremendously recommended that talks about the importance of like sigmoid S-curve and, you know, what we all think of as GPT-3 based on this, you know, just tremendous, tremendous growth in a very short period of time, or maybe what Malcolm Gladwell would have referenced as a tipping point. What do you think the travel industry needs to be doing to be ready for both scenarios, regardless of whether we view this as, you know, a S-curve, a sigma, like the book I'm reading says the S-curve is like the most important thing, you know, anybody can look at, right? Whether this is an S-curve and just in a dramatic, dramatic increase in a very short period of time, or whether this is something that developed over a long period of time, what should R&D stakeholders and, you know, you as all very forward-thinking, very innovative stakeholders in our industry, and Focusrite is, you know, one of the leading research organizations in the industry providing, you know, discussion and important research about innovation, what should we be doing to prepare for both scenarios, growth over a longer period of time, and then just dramatic growth in a very short period of time? Does that make sense? The question makes sense? Is that coherent?
Anybody want to jump in on that?
I could take a shot.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, I mean, as you're rightly pointing out, the technology per se, that has existed for a long time. I mean, the transformer technology, that has been around since 2017, right? So it's almost 5-6 years that the language models have been around, pre-trained transformers. So it's been there for a long time. Now, the magic that has happened in recent times is the advancement in the GPU, the capabilities of the GPU to process and process data much faster. Also, the cloud capability, which is you can scale horizontally and therefore do a lot. You can throw the entire internet corpus at it, and therefore, so when you're talking about the sigmoid curve, obviously it's moved very rapidly, and we are at the top of it. Whether I don't know what shape it will take from here. I mean, maybe another sigmoid, because the pace of change is maddening. I mean, all of us are seeing what's happening in the last every 2 months or every 3 months. You're seeing a completely new capability coming out in the GPT models. So right. The early days, I mean, I think none of us can actually predict whether we are at the peak of it or whether we are still at the bottom of it and it's still going to peak. But I can only address the magic that has happened in the last 2-3 years because of the GPU and the cloud capability.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Patrick, and I'll hold my question.
Sure, I was just going to say, I think, you know, one of the things we want to be really careful of is that we're always kind of working backwards from the customer problems that we're actually trying to solve. I mean, I think one of the things that is really interesting about ChatGPT is it, you know, it causes us to not always have a great understanding of what it's actually doing, right? And we ascribe lots of capabilities to it, which it doesn't actually have. And I think there's this danger that we see it as a, you know, this magical tool that we can look for problems to solve rather than kind of coming from our customer and saying, you know, what is it that's, you know, bad about our travel experience today? What is it that we can improve about the apps, and how can we, you know, potentially use this or other technologies to help help solve? So, you know, I definitely think it will have lots of really interesting applications, but we should work from the, you know, the customer problem rather than saying like, where are the places that we can apply this interesting technology, if that makes sense.
Yeah, which we've certainly seen some of that, right? You know, that rush to kind of jump in some cases, which the question I was going to ask is, does that pressure to move fast kind of heighten the risk in relation to some of these privacy and security issues and, you know, the thoughtfulness piece of it?
You want me to go first?
Sure.
All right. So, see, moving fast and being reckless are two different things.
So, sure.
The technology is moving at a leading pace, and therefore all of us will have to keep pace and move fast. So that's one part. But let me talk from the perspective of a mature e-commerce company, right? So, and when you're talking about risk, I think you're talking about both the user data safety and also model hallucination, or giving misleading information to the users, right? So as a technology capability, generative AI is in a very nascent stage right now. And I think a lot of experimentation needs to happen so all of us understand the implications better, both good and bad implications. So very early days, but mature and responsible companies will take very deliberate, considered, and measured steps as they unleash and unlock the potential of these offerings. Now, within the context of an e-commerce company, again, the transactional context is very well-defined and well-contained. It's not an open-ended problem. You always operate within the bounds of your business domain. Plus, in the use cases that at least we are experimenting, the data remains strictly within the confines of the system. So from that perspective, for an e-commerce use case, I don't see much of a risk. Of you can move fast and contain the risk as well. The risk is only if you have an open-ended conversation and use open-ended internet data, which you can't trust. As long as all of your intelligence is derived from your own data and that is segregated from the conversational interfaces, I think you should be okay.
I think that's a great point, Sanjay. I'm actually, I suppose, in some ways, I'm a veteran of AI, having worked on a project that analyzed 10 years of agriculture research and used natural language processing to find policy relevant interventions. So you could use the dashboard and you could say, I want to find something. I mean, obviously we didn't have chat interface, but you could use the dashboard to find, what policies have worked to mitigate climate change, and you could go down to the local area levels across the globe on this. So it was immensely powerful. But it was about patterns. It was about seeing patterns and data that otherwise humans couldn't see because the data was overwhelming. And it's fantastic at doing that. But there's a distinction between doing that within a fixed system and then doing that in an open way and in a way that learns from people, people's behavior. And I, you know, one of I think I'd be really interested to get Patrick and Sanjay's take on this is, you know, how do you go from a, you know, from using AI, generative AI, to find a solution, to finding an optimal solution, right? Which is maybe the difference between me using a web browser to you know, find a hotel, or going to a travel agent or an expert source on the internet who might be able have years of experience to tell, give me a curated understanding of my options. So how do we go from our solution to an optimal solution in with generative AI?
Yeah, that's a great question, because that gets into that piece about the AI really kind of knowing me then, correct?
Yes, and yes, being able to answer or anticipate those kinds of questions. I mean, of course, it doesn't know in an important way, but it is generating each query is going to be generating a series of responses that try and answer the question: what do I want at this particular moment? But yeah, Patrick and Sanjay are probably better qualified to take on this question than I am.
I would echo a lot of what Sanjay said. I mean, I think a lot of the, you know, the problems that we have are the sort of provenance, if you like, of the data that is embodied in these large language models. I think people are excited by these kind of general purpose models because they encompass lots of kind of common knowledge. And in travel, you know, most of the things that we don't change on a super fast basis. So these models seem to know lots about why and where you would travel in the world. But I think to kind of get to that, you know, optimal solution, we have all the problems that we've always had about how do we integrate, you know, real trusted content, whether it's the user generated content, whether it's inventory, whether it's, you know, attractions and events and things like that, so that we can really provide kind of trusted and authoritative information in these kinds of conversations. You know, we've all seen lots of examples where it's easy for these models to produce results that, you know, are credible as opposed to actually accurate. You know, when you're looking at what hours a museum might be open or something, it's important to get the right answer, not an answer that's got a truthy feel to it, right? And I think that it's all the same kind of data integration and orchestration questions that we've always had about how do we source and control all the data that they're building these models from, and maybe start with these kind of sandbox models rather than trying to build off these kind of general models, which encompass lots of data from maybe, you know, less authoritative sources.
I guess I'd be curious. I know, Trevor, you touched on this a bit, and certainly this could take the conversation, you know, much more, much longer and much more in depth. But I know, you know, you and I have talked about digital wallets and the verifiable credentials and the role that can play as a solution as generative AI becomes more integrated into the industry. Can you share any thoughts there about what, you know, folks across the travel industry should be keeping in mind?
Well, I think it's, you know, everybody is looking, so broadly, high level view, we all want seamless processes. It's what, you know, generations who've grown up with their lives mediated by mobile devices expect. It's what we've been conditioned by the events of the global pandemic to want, just to make things convenient. And there are a myriad reasons why this delivers benefits to, you know, customers and businesses alike and governments. You know, you're removing complexity, friction, error, and you're adding, you're fundamentally, you know, replacing all of that with the missing verification layer from the internet. And you're able to verify in a privacy-preserving way, which, you know, solves a whole other problem that has grown up over the past 20 years. So all this is tremendously exciting. And I, you know, when I and my co-writer, Carl Schwepp, wrote this paper, we wanted to step a little bit ahead and, you know, see what might be out a year and a half, 2 years from now, in which we are able to use generative AI, you know, like a butler, like a real live Jeeves who can go off and do things for us better than we can do ourselves. And what would be the conditions in which we could trust that, and that AI could trust us? And the conclusion was that the same verifiable credentials that are going to power people, you know, through check-in, onto planes, through borders, and to the hotels in a rapid, seamless, and painless way is likely to be the best solution for managing access to trusted resources, which is to say my data and my bank account. But there's a long way to go from there to here to there. There are a lot of steps. And at some point, you know, we may encounter what everybody in business knows as the trough of disillusionment before AI just becomes a normal way of interacting with resources and tasks in the digital part of our lives. Again, I would be, to those in the travel industry, I would be looking to see what the airlines and the airports and the hotels are doing. And if they're moving to seamless processes using verifiable credentials, then it would be useful to have, you know, to align with what's happening there, in part because concerns about data privacy and security are foremost in the development of that technology.
Right. Well, as we are getting ready to finish up, that gives us a nice topic to kind of close on. I would be curious, Patrick and Sanjay, if you both have any closing thoughts to share, and specifically if this idea of verifiable credentials is something at all that you are exploring, or, you know, still feels a bit down the road, or any thoughts on that. Patrick, do you want to start us?
Sure. I mean, I think the specifics of verifiable credentials is not something that we're kind of deep into at the moment, but I think one of the sort of longer term things that we feel with these models as a whole is this idea of kind of verification and authoritative data sources as something that becomes, you know, even more important. I think, you know, we already see it on the web, obviously, that it's easy to get lots of information about lots of things, of which most is wrong or misleading, and it's hard to know, you know, what the right answer to these questions are. I feel like these chat models kind of further emphasize that problem, and whether it kind of shifts the balance, by commoditizing this easily accessible information about everything, it makes it even more important to be able to understand, you know, referencing and sourcing, and when we can be confident that a piece of data is correct, where it came from, and who stands behind it.
Right. Okay. And Sanjay, do you want to react at all to what Trevor was just sharing, or any other closing thoughts?
See, I'll address the verifiable credentials and the decentralized IT that you've been talking about. See, decentralized systems come into consideration only when the communication and collaboration happens across organizational boundaries. And I think that has to be decoupled from a generative AI use case also. So it has, it's orthogonal to the entire generative AI use case. It has an independent existence. And in India, actually, that is happening already. I mean, your airports and the tickets and the PNR all is linked into an app called Digi Yatra, where your credentials are all linked and you can just walk into the airport, show your face, get your picture taken without showing any tickets or anything, just a QR code and everything is, but that is all happening outside the realm of generative AI. I mean, it's right. a very given controlled environment between the travel companies and the airport authorities, and it's a trusted interaction that is happening. So, but again, I mean, that happens only when you have, when you are communicating across organizational boundaries. I don't think we are at a place where automated AI systems will take over and complete the transaction for you. I think we are far away from that. So we'll cross the bridge when we come to it, but we are further away from that. So okay. that's that on the verifiable credential, but yeah, that is yeah. all I have to say on that front.
Okay, wonderful. And it looks like maybe we got Rayon Van Schoor up, able to speak. If you can unmute, we'll just take a minute and love to hear your question.
Mitra, I just want to say you were very optimistic about doing this in half an hour. This is a very good topic. Congratulations on hosting it, and congratulations to the panelists for the fantastic input. I wanted to make a comment, but I think there will be a follow-up session, and I should do it there. But I think there's a question that Trevor touched on, which was to ask, you know, what is the problem we're solving for the user, and to focus on that. And I can see, as an aggregator of data in my business, I can see us trying to work towards a position where the user is giving consent for certain information to be shared with the ChatGPT or whoever else they're interacting with in that sort of cross-company boundary situation that Sanjay was talking about. So I think that could be a good discussion for a future session on this, which you should definitely try and organize, Mitra. So thank you for doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks. Sorry about those glitches, but glad we got you up there. Any final remarks before we shut down? We have gone a bit long, but this has been a great discussion. Maybe we can, let me ask this actually, maybe just a quick kind of prediction, you know, in the next year or maybe 5 years, like how quickly do you envision the impact, and both internally, let's say, in the case of Sanjay and Patrick, as far as at your companies, as well as in the way you're interacting with customers?
See, 5 years is a rather long time. I mean, looking at the maddening pace of progress on the generative AI front, let's talk about the next year or maybe the next 2 years only.
Because, yeah.
I mean, so far out, who knows what will happen. Language models are evolving very, very rapidly. And you were asking about the outlook for the next few years. I think for a country like India that has 22 regional languages, this language model could be a godsend. I mean, it's a boon for everyone in smaller towns and villages who will be able to transact in the native regional language. And better still, if they can do it in a voice interface, because it opens up an entire world of opportunities for this segment of customers. So just keeping the customer at the center, this is a huge opportunity in that segment. Also, there's a huge opportunity for making e-commerce apps accessible and inclusive for people with visual impairments, limited manual dexterity, literacy barriers, and those who feel difficulty navigating in an app environment. So the inclusive part that this whole generative AI and this language models will enable.
I appreciate you kind of helping us wrap up on an optimistic note like that. You know, where we started off, I was maybe talking about some of the fears and concerns and calls for regulation, but those are certainly really great points about the amazing potential that this provides. Trevor, Patrick, any final remarks you'd like to share?
I'll be watching Make My Trip very closely. It's a brilliant point on the language issue. And I think that those kind of benefits are going to be really tremendous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would totally echo the same thing. I think over the next year, we'll see, you know, continuing sort of hype and exploration of different ways that we can apply these models in, you know, existing use cases. And probably the year after that, we'll start to see, you know, some really impactful applications. But I suspect that, you know, there'll be things that we might not have thought of yet. You know, I think it's going to change a lot about how we work and interact with customers and internally. The ways that it'll have the most impact are probably things we can't predict right now.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. All right, well, we are out of time. I do want to say I hope to see many of you at our Focusrite Europe event in June in our new city of Barcelona, where we will have a session on the latest related to ChatGPT. Thank you to our guests, Trevor, Patrick, and Sanjay. And thanks to all of you for listening. And to my colleagues, Gene Coe and Alexis Capiatis, for their help in producing this event. Until next time, I am Mitra Sorrells. Thanks so much. Have a great day.